From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's a beautiful Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunachish, hawa, toyaksak nusam, salama for joining the conversation. On today's show, on Monday, there will be a celebration called the Holi Festival, a famous Hindu festival, which will be accompanied by a Bollywood dance flash mob. We'll chat with Nimi Phillips from Spice and get all the details. We'll meet the new chief of the Juneau Police Department, Derek Boss, and we'll chat with Nami Juneau about their ongoing family-to-family class. Those conversations, plus news, savory moment, and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. In our news highlight, Alaska author Lily Tzroiluk was recognized as one of USA Today's Women of the Year earlier this month. Past awardees include Kamala Harris, Goldie Hawn, Quanah Chasing Horse, and Nicole Mann, the first Native American woman in space. The award honors women who are using their voices for change. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen talked to the author about her book and what's next.
Lily Tzroiluk says she was stunned when she heard the news. USA Today's Woman of the Year is awarded to around 60 women nationally every year, with one selected from each state. Tzroiluk was Alaska's awardee.
It was a great surprise and a great honor, and I thank my people for bringing me this far.
Tzroiluk is Inupiaq, Tlingit, and Nisga, a First Nations people in present-day British Columbia. The 46-year-old author's debut work, Sivulik Ancestor, published in 2022, is a historical fiction novel set during the commercial whaling boom of the late 1800s.
It's a story of survival and making a trek across Arctic Alaska up into Arctic Canada, Herschel Island. The theme of it is a mother's love and cultural knowledge.
The year is 1893, and smallpox has decimated Indigenous communities in Northwest Alaska. And in the middle of that devastation, an Inupiaq mother is attacked by white men. When she regains consciousness, she learns her young daughter has been kidnapped by a whaling captain from New England. In pursuit of the kidnappers, she travels hundreds of miles through brutal Arctic storms while simultaneously witnessing the effects of colonization and sickness along the way.
I wanted to show resilience and survival of what an Indigenous mother, an Inupiaq mother, would have to do for her children to survive.
A large portion of the book takes place in villages around Tzroiluk's home community of Point Hope, or Tikiak in Inupiaq. She says, as an Indigenous author, it's important for her to tell the stories of her ancestors.
Tikiak is the oldest continuously living settlement in America. And so many researchers, historians, explorers, quote-unquote explorers, have traveled to Point Hope and written about Point Hope. But from the non-Native perspective, not all of them saw us as human beings.
Tzroiluk says she spent 2 years writing full-time on the book. A large chunk of that time was devoted solely to research. She says the story was inspired from firsthand accounts from tribal leaders and elders, as well as Tikiak's oral stories from recorded archives. In researching 19th century whaling, Tzroiluk explored archives of the Massachusetts towns of Nantucket and New Bedford, as well as ship logs and census records. And then she made an interesting discovery.
I discovered that there was a lot more people of color in the whaling industry than what we've been taught.
Tess Roy-Luke says learning about African-American crewmen allowed her to explore time through another lens, beyond Indigenous and non-Indigenous perspectives.
It does offer a different nuance, a dynamic into your storytelling.
Tess Roy-Luke says she's already started working on her second novel, also historical fiction, that takes place in 1950s Canada. It will focus on trauma around residential schools. She says she hopes it will bring more attention to crimes the Canadian government and various religious institutions committed against Indigenous peoples. While both books deal with some heavy topics, Tess Roy-Luke says ultimately she wants to convey the strength of Indigenous nations and her ancestors.
It is about reclaiming our stories, how we view the universe and our people's history, the land's history. I think not enough has been written of how healthy we were as a nation, as Indigenous peoples, before we were affected by sickness and epidemics and famine.
Lili Tess Roy-Luke's book, Savulik, Ancestor, is out now. She says she hopes to complete her second novel by the end of next year. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
And in Juno, a technology that typically listens for volcanic eruptions and nuclear explosions will now be used to keep track of avalanches. The new system on Thane Road picks up on low-frequency rumblings of snow coming down off the mountains, sounds that are usually undetectable to the human ear. As KTO's Anna Canny reports, listening to those rumbles will help the Alaska Department of Transportation make the roadway safer.
On a sunny February afternoon by the roadside of Thane Road, Scott Havens opens the door of a nondescript white metal box to reveal a jumble of computer equipment.
A lot of cables. So yeah, this is our data logger. And this is our communication cube, which talks to our data logger. And this is what we are here down here installing.
Then he points to the steep snow-covered slope of Mount Roberts across the road.
As the avalanche is coming down, it's going to create that rumble that we're picking up.
Humans can't hear most of the rumbling that's generated by the snow coming down off the mountain because it's infrasound, a kind of sound that's too low frequency for our ears to pick up. It can only be heard when it's sped up, like this. That's an avalanche at a ski resort in Utah, where Havens has already installed an infrasound detection system. His company, Snowbound Solutions, is pioneering infrasound technology for avalanche detection. Similar detection systems have already been used to keep track of volcanic eruptions and illegal nuclear weapons tests across the world. But all kinds of things produce infrasound. On Thane Road, the challenge is distinguishing between sounds from helicopters, cruise ships, and the humming of power lines.
Like, we're picking up this car that's coming by us. So we can hear it as it's moving through the atmosphere. It's emitting infrasound.
Which sounds like this. The system sorts out sounds by pinpointing their locations. The infrasound detection boxes are arranged in triangles at the base of different avalanche paths along Thane Road. Each triangle is called an array.
The array works a lot like your ears. So as the sound moves across the array, you can differentiate where the sound is coming from because it'll arrive at each of those sensors at a different time.
And when the sound can be traced to somewhere up the slope in an avalanche start zone, an automatic alert will be sent to people like Pat Dreyer, an avalanche program specialist for the Alaska Department of Transportation. Dreyer says hearing avalanches is crucial because you often can't see them. Most avalanches don't make it all the way down to the road. They happen high up in the mountains, where storms can cloud visibility. Or they happen at night.
We're assuming that avalanches are occurring, or we're predicting that they're occurring, but not having that positive feedback loop that something is happening.
Dreyer says that over time, the records they build of when avalanches happen and in what weather conditions will help them to improve their avalanche forecasting.
We can start to make some assumptions or even predictions of when they'll occur in the future so that we can better refine our methods for managing that hazard or closing the roadway.
More data will also help Havens to refine the technology so that it's possible to identify an avalanche not just by its location, but by its distinct infrasound signal. Avalanche infrasound does have a kind of recognizable rumble, like this. But the signal still varies a lot based on the type of avalanche and its size. Haven says that all the avalanche infrasound samples gathered in Juno and elsewhere could be used to train artificial intelligence systems that could recognize avalanches within seconds. And in the future, he says, infrasound detection could even be used to listen for things like rockfalls and landslides, too. In Juno, I'm Anna Canny.
For more local and statewide news, tune in during All Things Considered at 4 p.m. and Morning Edition starting at 5:45 a.m. each weekday. Or visit ktoo.org. Coming up next, we'll learn about the Holi Festival and a special Bollywood dance flash mob happening Monday in Juno. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
As a reminder, January 1st kicked off the permanent fund applications for 2024. And we just want to say thank you for choosing KTOO when you pick, click, give. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. For the third year in a row, Spice Juno Indian Cuisine has been celebrating the Holi Festival, a famous Hindu festival. It's also known as the Festival of Colors. It's a day to unite, forget resentments, and enjoy food, love, and forgiveness. This year, it's co-hosted by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and the Juno Downtown Business Association. And this year, there is an added bonus, a Bollywood dance flash mob. And here to chat about it all are Nimi Phillips, owner of Spice Juno Indian Cuisine and Spice Cafe and Art Gallery, and Rochelle Bonet from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Namaste. Gunath Chi, Shaye Adi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasaiyati. How's it going?
Good.
Awesome.
For having us.
Of course. Yeah. And it's just, it's such a wonderful thing. So first of all, Nimi, let's get people familiar with who you might be. I know you're also on the featured Tongass Voices, which is a new feature from KTOO. Mm-hmm. People can go and listen to that and one of your chefs and making some food in the kitchen, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
that was
that's
so
great.
Sweet. That was thanks to KTOO.
Yeah, of course. But how long have you been the owner of Spice? When did it start?
So 2021 June.
21. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're almost to 3 years.
Almost to 3 years. June, it will be 3 years.
Wow.
And we have celebrated Holi for the past 3 years, like you were saying.
Yeah. And Spice is, as people know, one of the best, wonderful restaurants in town. And you also recently opened Spice Cafe and Art Gallery, which mm-hmm. I know people are really appreciating. Why did you do that?
It's been 1 year also. That's March 8th was the last year opened it. And it's been 1 year. So it's mainly because it's an art gallery. It's to support the local artists, musicians. So we have live music Thursday, Friday, Saturday, local musicians. And this is our fifth artist group. I have seven artists right now. And the March will be the end of their display time. And then the new artists come in and we display it for 3 months at a time.
Oh, that's awesome. Super that's cool. So great. Yeah. Okay, so tell us about the Holi Festival. What is the Holi Festival for those who may not know?
Yeah,
what that
Holi
is?
Festival is a big Hindu festival and is celebrated by all Indians. Not it doesn't matter Hindu, Muslim. We all come together and we celebrate Holi Festival. Holi Festival is a festival of colors. We throw colors at each other to symbolize the spreading of love and harmony. So if you this is the time, like if you're not talking to somebody for a couple of years, this is the time to say, hey, I forgive you. Let's come together and, you know, enjoy this festival. And there's a the Hindu festival traditionally is because to celebrate the love of Lord Krishna and Radha. That was the eternal love between the Lord Krishna and Radha and the triumph of good over evil. So the victory of Lord Vishnu as the Narasimham, that's the half human, half lion, killing the evil person at the time was there. So that's the good over evil.
Sort of the history of
the history of
the
Hindus.
But it's become sort of this tradition of love and honor and forgiveness.
Honor and forgiveness. Yeah. Yeah, it celebrates. It's all over South Asia, Asia. Now it's celebrating Holi. It doesn't have to be just for the Indian community. So what I want to bring to Juno is not created as a religious thing, but yet as a festivities, a celebration to bring the whole Juno together as one and celebrate this fun occasion, share love, share community, share happiness with each other.
Yeah. Okay. So now this is, let's just get some of the details out of the way and then we'll go back a little bit.
Sure.
But so this is happening Monday in the evening time. Give us the details of how it's going to be. And I just want to mention this too. It's free. Right.
It is free. Yeah. It is a free event. Yeah.
So give us when and where.
So it's going to be March 25th, Monday, this coming Monday. The Holi Festival ceremony, that's the throwing colors at each other or colors in the air ceremony, is at 9 p.m. The reason we do it at 9 p.m., it correlates with the time in India in the morning time. So the festival in India is a 2-day festival. And the first day is the bonfire, food, dancing, all sort of stuff. The first day, the second day is the actual color throwing festival. So it's a 2-day festival in India. So we're doing it all in the same day and we're doing it on the 25th at 9 p.m.
I see. Okay.
So this year, to make it even bigger, we're adding a flash mob Bollywood dancing.
Woohoo!
Yes. For that. And that's at 8 p.m. And the reason for that is there's a lot of interest in Juno for Bollywood dancing. And Bollywood dancing, it doesn't matter who you are, what age level you are. It's very forgiving. It's for everyone. It's super easy to follow. There's no strict steps or anything like that. So it's a really fun get together, fun dancing event together. So
yeah, and if you're familiar with Bollywood dancing, you may have seen videos of it online. If you saw a nice Indian boy at Perseverance, mm-hmm. I think Nimi was involved in sort of the choreography of that at the end of the show. And it was really fun to see that come out. And so the idea around this event though is that it is for everyone. So
it's for everyone.
You don't have to be Indian, you don't have to be religious. No. You know, you can bring somebody that you maybe haven't talked to in a couple of years, like you said. Maybe you're going to forget.
Yeah.
So
wear anything you like to wear. There's no rules to it. You know, come together. Just a fun big event, and you know, hoping more people will show up downtown. You know, come to local businesses and retails and fill up all our restaurants with reservations and
So the colors that you throw at people, do certain colors have certain meanings?
No, it's just colors because I look at it this way. I look at it, we all colorful. We all have different personalities and colors are the different personality of different people, you know. So it just symbolizes the individuality of each person. That's how I look at it. And it's just color. And this color is made with food coloring and cornstarch. So it does come off, but if it's like a cashmere sweater or something, it is not coming off. So do not wear anything such as.
That's what I was going to say when you said wear what you want, but I was like, make sure it's machine washable.
Yeah. The reason I said wear what you want is for the Bollywood flash mob. So if you want to wear something colorful, that's what I would say. Wear something colorful. Indian people are super colorful people. Wear something colorful for the dancing. And you have a time in between to go change. We have bathrooms available. Change into a white t-shirt or something that you can see how much color you got on.
Oh, I see. So you could do the Bollywood portion at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Excuse me, with some kind of cool outfit on. And then you don't necessarily have to get that thrown the colors at. You can go change into something else.
Yeah.
And then have that for your colors. Because I think white it sounds like a good thing because then you get
to
see
wear white.
Kind of the difference in what happens to you. So who makes do people have to bring their own colors or is that something?
I will have the colors. Okay. I bring it from India every year. I got 13 kilograms of color that I just brought from India in October.
What? That's amazing.
Yeah, I bring it every year because the color you buy on Amazon or things that you get here, I don't know what's in it. I cannot truly know what's in it. This,
right,
at least
right.
I know. We use it in India. This is what we use in India. So
I see.
I can truly say it is food coloring and cornstarch. It's just a powder, you know, I'm hoping we will have enough for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And so you go back to India a couple times a year or at least once a year.
Okay. October, we close down the restaurant. That's the time we use our cooks and chefs to go different restaurants and learn, you know, more cooking, more culture. Or this year we're planning to take my chef and head chef, sous chef, and a server. And I'm hoping more people will come to India with me.
I bet you could probably do like one of those package deals and get people from Juno to go with you.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, that would be really fun.
Super cool.
Because I think people would be interested in that and seeing the culture and because you're bringing it here with the restaurant and all of these events that you're doing, like the Holi Festival, which I think is cool. Mm-hmm. So Rochelle, how is the Juno Arts and Humanities Council involved in this festival?
We're helping NIMI spread the word about the event, and some of our staff will be there to help volunteer at the event on Monday night. And in addition, we'll also have some folks joining us from the Downtown Business Association.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's really nice to partner, right?
Yeah,
NIMI?
Yeah. But we will have lots of volunteers from Downtown Business Association. And I'm also part of one of the board members too with the Downtown Business Associations too. And we'll have a rehearsal for this Bollywood dancing on the 23rd Saturday at the Baranoff Treadwell Ballroom. So big thank you to Baranoff for opening up their ballroom for us to do a rehearsal. So if you are planning to join us, please come to the rehearsal so you know which way you're facing.
Yes.
Which way your hips should go.
And, you know, we will be all coordinated that way.
Yeah. So that rehearsal's this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the 23rd. And it's going to be at the Baranoff Hotel, as NIMI said. It's at 5 o'clock. And anybody's welcome to come and figure all of that out. Now, if you can't make the rehearsal, can you still be involved on Monday with the dance?
Absolutely. But you might be, you know, missing a couple of steps. But I'm okay with that.
you might have to learn how to, if you can follow along quickly,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And that's good. And then so on Monday, the flash mob is going to be at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. outside of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to go for about 20 minutes or so, it looks like. And you're just going to play some wonderfully loud music.
Wonderfully loud Indian music.
Yeah.
There'll be four different musics. And we're not going to play all 6-7 minutes of each one. But, you know, we'll choreograph it in such a way. It'll be fun and loud and crazy celebration.
Yeah. And that's at 8 o'clock. So do people need to show up at a certain time?
I would say about 7:30 show up, and then we'll go through the dance, and then you have a little bit of time to go change, go get a drink at distillery, brewery. That's another thing. All the businesses downtown is participating with us, and everybody's super amazing and super supportive and very amazing neighbors I got.
Yeah, I think you said that people were going to be staying open a little bit later, maybe.
Yeah,
because
opening
they know,
up later.
Because they know this is happening.
Mm-hmm. And we have a huge list going, and we might be adding more people, more businesses into the list because I'm still getting more details. And
I see.
We are going to be posting a list of all the participating locations that we know of. That's going to go out tomorrow. So keep an eye on our Facebook, on the Spice Facebook, and also on Downtown Business Association if you want to get the full lineup of participating locations.
And I love this because this is basically right next door to you, but Alaskan Robotics.
Yeah.
They're going to have Indian board games available for guests to play.
Yeah, we were planning to do Indian board games, and the shipment is kind of a little behind. So they will definitely have board games available.
They'll have board games, maybe some Indian board games.
But there might be a miracle happens.
Yeah.
We're crossing our fingers.
That's
so good that they're participating in that way, though.
And the brewery is doing some special drinks that they're taking our chai and they're brewing it. And also distillery is also having some fun drinks, and we're going to cross sell between all three of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And they're doing a special Holi Festival cocktail.
And we'll be selling that too without alcohol in it because we are beer and wine only.
But go next door.
Go next door and get the actual.
If you need that other stuff. Yeah. And I do want to again mention that this is free. It's open to anyone who would like to participate. And it's the Holi Festival. It's a really cool Hindu festival. It's also known as the Festival of the Colors. You come together. You forget your resentments. You bring somebody that maybe, as Numi said, that you haven't talked to in a while. You know, throw some red at them, and then throw some blue, and then maybe some pink, and you know, maybe some red. I don't know, all the different colors that are available. And you become friends once again, or bring a friend and a partner or whoever, and just, you know, get rid of your disagreements. And I love the fact that you're coordinating it with the timing of the festival in India, that because at 9 p.m., what time will that be in India then?
So I think that would be like 8 a.m. I think we're there, or it would be like a 10 a.m., something like that. So because of the hour time difference, it's really hard to, I think 13 hours ahead of time.
Yeah.
Or 14 hours ahead of time, something like that. So I would say either at 10 a.m. or 9 a.m. or something like that.
And so the 2-day festival that you're talking about that happens in India starts at the time that you're going to be celebrating on Monday. So the beginning of the two days
we're starting it.
I see.
So it's this way, you know, and plus I think evening is available for everybody. Everybody works, and this way you can get home and get ready and come downtown and spend time downtown.
I love it. I think it's great.
And we're also cooking all sort of amazing food, family recipes. I'm making a fried rice and chicken curry and papadum and all this stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like really what people should be doing is going downtown and having some dinner at some one of these restaurants and then, you know, somewhere, and then sort of figuring out how to get involved in this Bollywood dance flash mob, which I'm sure there's going to be much social media posting about this and all of that. So bring your cameras. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock will be the celebration of the Holi Festival and sort of the throwing of the colors, as it were. And how long does that go on for?
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I only have this much color, and we're going to have a lot more people this year. So I have a feeling we're going to get rid of colors a lot faster than we did last year.
I love it.
The photos, speaking of photos, Cody Bennett will be taking photos, and Michael Penn will be taking photos. And also KTO will be covering the whole segment with the photographer as well. Again, thank you to KTO for doing this for
us. I'm sure they're going to get somebody, one of the reporters out there, to get some audio. So again, it's the Holi Festival. It's happening outside Spice Juno, Indian Cuisine, downtown Juneau, on Monday night. And it basically starts at 8 o'clock. If you want to be part of the Bollywood dance flash mob, that starts at 8 o'clock outside Spice. But you really want to participate in the rehearsal that's happening on the 23rd. That's this Saturday at 5 p.m. at the Baranoff in their Treadwell Ballroom. And then you show up on Monday and be part of that flash mob. And then, of course, be part of the throwing of the colors, the festival of colors, as it were. It's the whole festival. Numi, you are amazing for bringing this to Juneau. It's the third year in a row. I hope it's a tradition that continues for many years to come.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate you being here. Namaste.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Okay, up next, we'll meet and chat with the new Juneau Police Department Chief, Derek Boss. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. You've probably heard it before. Growing herbs outside your kitchen door means that super fresh seasonings like piney Tuscan rosemary, citrusy lemon thyme, and fruity pineapple sage are always within arm's reach. And that's a great reason. homegrown herbs are definitely more flavorful than ones that have spent a week or more in a plastic box under fluorescent grocery store lights. But there are other incentives. An herb garden, even a simple one consisting of a single pot, could transform the way you see yourself. Because herbs are so easy to grow, even in northern climates, you might start thinking of yourself as a gardener, someone who spends time in the sun wearing a straw hat, someone with the wisdom to successfully tend a living thing. A trip to your local nursery for a plant, a pot, and some soil will get you started. Hello, gardener. Also, you'll make new friends. Unlike grocery store herbs, homegrown herbs have a life cycle, one that includes flowers. Chives produce bodacious purple pom-poms. Thyme, delicate lavender sprays. Dill plants produce a flourish of tiny yellow umbrellas. Your porch or deck is now a haven for pollinators like bumblebees, hummingbirds, and butterflies, who stop by for regular visits. An herb garden also turns a meal into a work of art. Arrange succulent grassy sprigs of parsley over a fillet of roasted fish. Pluck individual florets from a chive blossom and toss like confetti into a salad. Place a trio of slender, satiny rosemary needles in the center of your soup. Find tips for starting and maintaining an herb garden at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time now for our monthly check-in with the Juno Police Department. And today, it's a pleasure to meet the newly appointed Chief of Police, Derek Boss, who has probably one of the best names that I've ever heard for a police chief, Da Boss.
I appreciate that. Really, I just tell people it's because I can't spell.
I love it. It is B-O-S. We lose an S on the end. Chief Boss most recently served as the chief of the Eagle Police Department in the town of Eagle, Colorado. Prior to this role, he served as chief of police for the Brush Police Department in Brush, Colorado. And he began his law enforcement career as a sworn officer with, is it Chaffee?
It's Chaffee.
Chaffee County Sheriff's Office in Chaffee, Colorado in 2006. He's got a Bachelor of Arts degree in political studies with an emphasis on criminal justice. And from Dort?
Yes, sir.
Dort College. Welcome, Chief. It's such a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming. Wasa'iyati. How's it going?
It's great to be here. It's going well.
Good, so, good. It's really a pleasure to have you. So I know I just went over a little bit of your background, but can you tell us sort of where you're from? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Colorado.
Okay.
So grew up in a pretty avid outdoors family, you know, camping, hiking, fishing, hunting, all of that. And yeah, been doing that the rest of my life.
So. Wow. Okay. And so you got into the police area after college and all. So you kind of, when did you know that you wanted to become a police officer? Was it one of those things where you were, because I was a boy, I wanted to be a police officer, a fireman, all that stuff.
I think I went through the cycle like every other boy.
Yeah.
But when I was in high school, I had a cousin who was a police officer in Colorado Springs where I lived. And so I actually rode with him on different occasions, and I blame him.
Ah, so you got to see it firsthand, really.
Yeah, he was a pretty heavy influence on me, so.
Yeah, at one point I was thinking, I remember about the Secret Service. For some reason, I thought that would have been so cool. But then I found out you have to jump in front of whoever you're protecting.
Right.
And I was like, I don't think I have the guts to do that. So I just think the police department, you all do amazing work in our community.
Thank you.
And
we've
talked many times on this show about how in Juneau, the police are, it's more, even a more special relationship, because in many areas, the police police department or the policemen work in different places than where they live. But here you live and work in the same town. And so we get to know you sort of really well. And so I guess because of Colorado, is that why Alaska was of interest to you?
Well, I would back up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Alaska's kind of always been of interest, even before I was in law enforcement. And my wife and I, as we started looking at Alaska more seriously, we were really drawn to Southeast Alaska. So I've been asked that many times since I've moved here, you know, is why Southeast? Why not the rest of Alaska? And truly, Southeast has been our goal since we wanted to move here. And it's just a beautiful place. We love the small town environment. And like you were just saying, you know, we live and work in the same place. And that's something we want.
Yeah.
We want to be engaged in the community. We want to be part of a vibrant community. And Juneau is very much that. So it's just been a great fit for our family.
That's great. And it's really nice that your partner and your family are able to be like, yes, let's go to Southeast Alaska and make a go of this particular thing. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things.
Yeah.
One thing that I know has been covered widely and talked about a lot over the last year, year and a half or so is the staffing. And I know that's been a problem for many areas of industry. Nursing, I know, is having difficulty, and especially after the pandemic or even during the pandemic. So where are we now? Last, I think we heard we were still down about maybe 14 positions or so?
We're right around that 14 mark still.
Okay.
And then our communication centers where we've had the second biggest deficit, and that's doing much better now. We still have openings there, but we've been able to fill a couple. We have a couple good applicants in the running, and so that we're improving upon, but we still need about 14 officers. And then I would anticipate that number increasing just through natural attrition this coming year. So
right. And I remember Deputy Chief Campbell came on. I think he was saying that there was somebody coming in from Florida. And then that we also, he was mentioning dispatchers too, that we need some dispatchers. And I know that people can go to joinjpd.com, which is where you can find, there's a great website there with all kinds of information. And there, the hiring bonuses are still in place.
Yes, they are.
Even for the dispatcher position. So there is, I think it's a $10,000 bonus for the dispatcher position, which I think is interesting. And then there's bonuses for folks who may be new to the police force, because you're encouraging people who might be new to the police force, because then they'll go to academy and they'll get all the training and do all the things they need to do, right?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things we'd love to see goes back to the small town, but we'd love to see local applicants. And so any local applicants probably don't have experience. So yes, you know, the entry level, still get a bonus, even if you live here, not just a moving thing, but everybody gets the bonus. We'd love to see the local applicants coming in. And we will take care of all the training.
That's great. Are there specific things that people who might be interested in becoming a police officer should have sort of, I don't know, acuity for? Like, I mean, like in terms of what should they be having? You know what I mean? Like, what do they need to have?
That's actually a great question. I think first and foremost is the ability to build relationships and communicate with people. So much of what we do day in and day out is just communication with people. And somebody in crisis, you know, they might not need anything else besides a person to talk to, or a person to talk them down, or a person to, you know, be kind of that sounding board and help them work through their crisis. And that's what we do day in and day out. You know, I would say, I wouldn't put a number on it, but a huge majority of our work is just communication. So if you have the good, strong communication skills, the ability to interface with anybody, because we talk to everybody. You know, we are probably the most diverse interface in the community. So that ability to just communicate and build relationships, I would say, is the foundation of everything else that we do.
Yeah, that's a great start, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And do you have to take like a psych evaluation and all that kind of
stuff? Yes, you do.
I don't know if I'd pass that.
I don't know if I would either, but I'm here. So,
okay. So, of course, you can always go to joinjpd.com, find out more information about that. It's a continuing thing that the police department is looking for these positions in. There's 14 police officer or around that number, yes, as well as dispatcher positions and other communications positions available. So there is work. When we were kids, it was always like, there's always work at the post office, but now it's like, it seems like there's always work at the police department, which
that
is great.
Is. That there is.
Yeah. And we need that. So, all right. How did our community do for, we just had St. Patty's Day.
Yes.
And typically that's a night where we're encouraging people to make sure they have a designated driver and all those wonderful things. How did Juno do this year?
I think we did great, actually. We really, outside of our normal call volume, we didn't see anything out of the usual or uncommon. We didn't have major problems with drinking and driving. We didn't have any major crises because of St. Patrick's Day. So
that's great.
I think we did great.
Maybe it helped that it was on a Sunday.
Probably. Probably.
Because people have to go to work the next
day. That's
right. Okay. And then I just want to ask about this real quick. So in a recent appropriations bill for, it seems like a win for Juno, there yes. appears to be about $2 million set aside for the CBJ to upgrade the first responder radio communication system. This was all part of Lisa Murkowski, Senator Lisa Murkowski's work to designate funds for the city and borough of Juno. And so what kind of impact will that have for the police department?
That'll be huge for us. So currently our radio system is outdated, would be kind of an understatement. You know, it's old, very antiquated equipment. We have been at the point where we have to buy used items off eBay even to keep it up and running. And so this will be a tremendous jump for us to go from an older system up to state-of-the-art communication. The other benefit, it will help us with areas that are dead right now where the radios don't work. Mm. It will give us better coverage across the entire borough. So much safer for the officers. That will definitely enhance our response times, because if officers can't hear dispatch, they don't know they have a call to go to.
Right.
So that will be an improvement there. Definitely keep the officers safer so they can communicate with dispatch if they need help or whatever the scenario is, they can communicate that back. So this is a huge step for us. The total project is roughly between $22 and $24 million.
Mm.
So yeah, this is a big start in the right direction.
So the $2 million is just sort of the start of that. I work in radio, so I get the idea of equipment and how much it yes. costs, and it's a lot of money to make things continue to be updated and be the latest, you
yes.
know,
yes.
Equipment that makes it work. So, well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I guess my last question for today is, because hopefully we'll see you again here
on
the show, but what are some of your hopes for the future of Juno? Maybe not even the police department, but now that you've been here a couple months, what do you see so far, and what would you like to see happen in the future?
You know, I think Juno, just from my couple months here, is a great community. I think it's thriving in many areas. I think growth would be beneficial for us. You know, economic growth specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're ready for that. And I could be speaking completely wrong because I've only been here 2 months, but what I see, I think we're primed and ready for economic growth. And I think that benefits the whole community.
Yeah. I think optimistic outlook is a good thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And do you have an opinion on whether we need a traffic light at the Fred Meyer intersection?
I'm sure I would have an opinion, but I don't have one yet because I haven't okay. had enough time to look at all the data.
Because I know that's one that's on people's side. A lot of people yes. for and against on yes. that one. But yes. anyway, Chief Derek Boss from the Juno Police Department, thanks so much for coming in and giving us a little rundown today.
Absolutely.
Of course,
Thank you.
Yeah, gonna cheese. You can find out more at juno.org/police for all the details and things that are going on there. And of course, for recruitment purposes, you can go to joinjpd.com. Thank you so much, Chief. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Up next, NAMI Juno's family-to-family class offers support to those who are supporting a loved one with a mental health condition. We'll find out how you can participate next here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. K KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. KTOO turned 50 a few weeks back, and we are celebrating throughout the spring, and we want to hear from you, the community that has supported locally owned airwaves in Juneau for 5 decades. We'd love to hear your reflections on how KTOO has impacted you over the years. We're looking for audio submissions that are 1 to 3 minutes in length that share your thoughts, memories, driveway moments, personal stories about the station that we can use on the air. To submit, record your message on your smartphone and email it to junoafternoon@ktoo.org. Instructions for getting good audio can be found on our homepage at ktoo.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Salama, thank you. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's a pleasure to be joined now in the studio by a recent AWARE Woman of Distinction awardee, Debbie Fagnant, who is here to share with us about NAMI Juno's Family to Family class. The next Family to Family class will begin April 15th. It will be held on Mondays and Thursdays from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at 8711 Teal Street. Family to Family runs for 4 weeks, and you can register at NAMI, that's N-A-M-I, Juno.org. Welcome, Debbie. Gunath Chish, Ha'igudi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa'iti, how's it going?
Hey, it's great. It's good to be here.
That's good.
Yeah.
How was the AWARE ceremony?
It was, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime event for me, being honored and feeling, you know, so kind of humble about it all. So it was, yeah, it is great. It will be a memory to hang on to for a long time.
Yeah, and I know when you were on the show, when we were talking about all of the awardees the week prior, you know, you mentioned your work with NAMI Juno.
Yeah.
And so, and here you are to talk about this class. And it's something that you've been doing. You've been sort of, you're on their board, right?
I'm on the board. And I've been a volunteer for maybe almost 15 years or so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I love this program.
This particular program
was really helpful to my family about 20 years ago. We had a family member who came head to head with a serious mental illness, and it threw us all for a huge leap. You know, we weren't really sure where to go for help. And it was a friend of one of my kids who said, you know, you should talk to my mom. She's part of NAMI. Well, It was great. And she led us to this class, this very class, and it just got us on the road to being grounded in how to help our family member to live a good life. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. So tell us a little bit about that, like the family to family class. What does that mean? What is family to family, and what will the class cover?
Well, like you said, it's an 8-session educational program. So its focus is education, and it's available to everybody. It's free, and it's designed to help family members and their friends understand and support their loved ones while maintaining their own well-being. So our goals are kind of fall into two categories. One is to share current information, because information is power. It is. And so we learn a lot about anxiety disorders, the whole range of mental health conditions. Could be schizophrenia or bipolar or depression. So we learn about what the characteristics are and really what goes on in the brain when somebody is living with one of those health conditions. And then we also learn about the possibilities for living in recovery. So treatment strategies. There's a variety of treatment strategies and medication. And that's really an important part of the education component of the class. It's also to promote empathy. So you get a deeper understanding of the subjective lived experience that someone has if they're living with a mental illness. And that's really powerful. So the class is great.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so to be clear, just so we know, so this, because NAMI does some amazing work,
right?
And they're helping in all different areas.
You bet.
With folks who might have mental health conditions in a variety of yep. ways. And so this class is for family members of those who
yep.
are having issue
yep.
or have some kind of issue with mental health condition, right?
Because we know that the a really key component for any person who's living with a serious mental illness is support.
Mm.
And we talk about family, but we also talk about friends and partners and just people who care about them. And that if we can build a community of people around to support a person who's living with a serious mental illness, their likelihood of, you know, building a better life is so much stronger.
Hmm.
The other thing that we believe is that, mental health conditions are challenging and they can be traumatic events, both for the person and for the people who love them.
Hmm.
So they all need care. So we just talk about people who are impacted by mental illness.
And are the facilitators or the people who are there educating, those are also family members?
Exactly.
Like yourself, who had
exactly.
this in your past as well. So is that why it's called family to family?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. One of the big cornerstones of NAMI's work is believing in peer support, that there is something uniquely powerful when people who have the same lived experience get together and talk about that subject, as opposed to even someone who's a professional, they can bring in huge insight, but sometimes they don't have that that lived the power that comes from the lived experience.
Yeah, it's nice to hear from others who have gone through it, especially
right.
if it's new for you.
Exactly.
If it's something that has just happened, but you can also continue. It could be something you've been dealing with for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's also it. And I also love one of the notes I see here, which is there's some workshops and things on, one of them is self-care.
Absolutely.
With a focus on stress reduction, because I think a lot
yep.
of times you know, like you said,
yep.
the person who is dealing with this mental health condition, obviously we know and we understand that, but then we forget sometimes about the people who might be either their primary caregiver,
yeah.
another family member, a spouse.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I have, it takes so much. I had a dear friend of mine
yeah.
who, whose husband was afflicted with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And as it got worse,
yeah.
you know, she started to think about, like, what about me? And sometimes you can think, and she felt bad about feeling that way. But
it's very real.
Yeah.
It's very real. You know, so there's a phrase we use, like, remember in the, when you're on the airlines and they tell you that in case of an emergency, the first thing you do is you put on your own mask and then you help others. And that we really have to be strong. And if you're taking care of someone or if you, you know, you have to be grounded and ready to go. So self-care is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is big. I mean, this is an amazing class. It starts up on April 15th.
It does.
So you have more than enough time to register for this class. You
yep.
can register at NAMI Juno. It's NAMI Juno.org. And there is actually a whole page. You can do NAMIJuno.org/family-2-family. But you
right.
can also find it under programs.
Exactly.
And
if you look under classes on the main.
Yeah.
on the main site. Yeah.
Yeah.
My husband and I and Karen Lipson are the teachers for this next session. So we're looking forward to it.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's going to start up on April 15th. It's Mondays and Thursdays.
Yep.
So twice a week, you're committing for 4 weeks, twice a week from 5:30 p.m. To 8 p.m. And it happens at 8711 Teal Street. That's the new building out there. And it's called Family to Family. And Debbie, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about this class.
You're welcome.
And getting the word out for
this.
That is really, really good.
And we haven't said yet that dinner is provided.
Oh, dinner's well. I mean, it is.
We got to take care. We have to take care of ourselves, right?
I love that. Dinner is provided. Yeah. Thanks so much, Debbie. Really appreciate it. That's NAMIJuno.org. NAMIJuno.org. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Nobody else's shoes. Wasn't put here to live a life that I didn't choose. I refuse to shrink to fit all your expectations, and I refuse to accept all your limitations. And I may not be for everybody, but you can be sure that I know my worth. I've been told that I'm a creature of disbelief. Stole a few hearts, but does that make me a lifelong thief? I walk tall 'cause of all them that paved the way. And if you were smart, you would listen to what I got to say. Well, I learned this lesson a long time ago. There are people out there who don't know. I was put on this earth to shine bright and proud. When I leave this life, my star gonna shine bright and loud. You can knock me down, but I'ma make you see. I wasn't made for you, honey. I was made for me. I remember one day when my brother, he told me, make a splash, make a fuss, baby girl, make them see. If you're gonna do it right, why not make a little trouble? If you're gonna waste some time, why not make it double? And I may not be for everybody, but you can be sure that I know my worth. I was never gonna stick around for nobody else, but I was always true about how I felt. And if you made it this far, you must be worth a damn. 'Cause baby, you know I'd come running about fast as I can. I learned this lesson a long time ago. There are people out there who don't.
That's with a young man right here live in studio a couple weeks back. She will be at the Alaska Folk Festival, the 49th annual Folk Festival, coming to Juneau in just a couple of weeks. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Tomorrow, Culture Rich Conversations continues their celebration of Women's History Month and will be discussing being Black and trans in Alaska. Juneau Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Ok Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, and find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Gunath Chish for listening, and have a lovely Juno evening.